At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
We're welcoming my good friend and colleague, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, looking at China and the stimulus program announced one more time by the central government. You will recall these stimulus programs have been routine ever since the gigantic stimulus program back in 2008-2009 during the Great Recession. These days, however, the programs have to address what everyone can see, even if the numbers are not transparent, which is the Chinese economy is troubled. We welcome Andrew Collier, who is a principal at Orient Capital, and also a man who we depend upon to interpret these non-transparent stimulus packages. Andrew, what I've learned is some of this direction for new investment is at the consumer class. Often a complaint is that consumers don't shop enough. But there's more to it than that. How do you measure the most recent example? Was it big enough? Was it too big? Good evening to you, Andrew.
Good evening. No, John, it's never too big because the Chinese government does not want to throw good money after bad. Their property market has been driving the economy for the last 20 years, and the property market has collapsed over the last 3 years. And the government is just trying to put enough money out there. I think the last figure was 1.6 trillion U.S. dollars, which seems like a lot, but the Chinese economy is much larger, just to get people back into spending and back into buying property. Unfortunately, most Chinese are fairly pessimistic about the future of the economy. In fact, I talked to a Chinese person by Zoom yesterday in Beijing who told me that the Chinese are actually more negative about the future of their economy than even Americans, who are quite negative about the future of the Chinese economy. So Xi Jinping, the leader of the country, is doubling down on investment in production of manufacturing goods. And unfortunately, they're overproducing and there's not enough demand either in China or overseas. So it's basically going to, the stimulus is not going to do much to revive the dwindling Chinese economy.
Andrew Collier is the author most recently of China's Technology War, Why Beijing Took Down Its Tech Giants. I'm looking forward to talking to Andrew about this because his predictions of 2022 when the book was published have all come true and more. However, we're looking at the troubled economy. Gordon, you have a question for Andrew.
Andrew, Xi Jinping, by creating more productive capacity, is contributing to the issue of deflation. And deflation, of course, just kills consumer economies because consumers realize that if they wait just a few months or even more, they'll be able to get goods cheaper. Xi Jinping talks about trying to stimulate consumption, but it seems that his talk is inconsistent with what he's actually doing. Your measure of this?
Yes, exactly. He calls the consumer economy welfareism. He's really not interested in consumption. He's mostly interested in what I call techno-nationalism, which is creating China as a superpower in semiconductors and electronic vehicles and other areas. I sympathize a bit with him because obviously with the tariff war with under Donald Trump, it made China's position quite difficult. But doubling down on too much production of steel and copper and other manufacturing goods is not going to help rejuvenate the economy. And the tech side is too small to really make much of a difference.
Andrew, a story told by a colleague of ours recently about the consumer, and it strikes me as an example of how desperate the situation is for people who are accustomed to earning very good salaries. The consumer class knows now that if you use your credit card, you gain points that can be applied to travel or hotels. You can also sell those points online. And one young woman, we were told, has two companies. She buys in the morning and sells in the afternoon to herself, and then gains points from that and resells the points on the black, on the open market. That's somebody who used to earn six figures. That's desperation if that was happening in the U.S. Is it seen that way or just clever in China?
Well, quite frankly, I know some Americans who would do that kind of point arbitrage. But the interesting question, and this came up yesterday with a friend I was talking to in Beijing. She said that, in fact, the coastal cities where people have had a boom time, they got big jobs with tech companies. Their salaries zoomed. They were working for, you know, also for Google and other Western companies. And that has collapsed quite sharply. So they went from boom times to fairly difficult times where their unemployment is quite high. There's a difference between them and the people in the hinterlands, what we would consider the flyover states in America, where a lot of them had very low retirement salaries, but they have not changed. And their attitude, as long as I'm getting my retirement salary from my fairly dumb job at the state firm, I'm okay with that. So there's a split in the country between the coastal elites who are now suffering a huge drop in incomes and other parts of the country who are still somewhat favorable towards Xi Jinping.
Gordon, I have a question.
Andy, there are these reports of people getting degrees from Oxford now being essentially in the gig economy, being Uber drivers, delivering food. Are these reports typical or are they just exaggerations?
No, that's true. I mean, a lot of people are getting degrees because the country was pushing that, both overseas at places like Oxford and Harvard, and also domestically at universities. Unfortunately, there are not enough high-tech jobs, particularly with the declining economy, that's been relying on debt, similar to what we had before the mortgage crisis in 2008. So now a lot of those jobs have disappeared, and they're desperate to find some way to get employment. And as you know, Gordon, there's a term now, lying flat, which is basically like the younger generation saying, well, we're not even going to bother because we know we really can't get ahead. So we're just going to lie flat.
There is talk of deflation. Deflation is a curse in history. And Gordon's described it ably. You don't buy because it'll be cheaper tomorrow. To defeat deflation takes years. Is that the situation that we could be looking at in China, Andy?
Yes, I agree with that. I don't think deflation is the main reason why people aren't buying. I think they're more concerned about their future, so they have to save for healthcare and retirement and so forth. But the deflation, to me, is an indication that the economy is no longer driving growth. There's not enough demand for goods. People don't want to buy cars because they don't have money. Now, the exports to the Europe and to the United States, as we well know, are suffering. So if you don't have an export market or a strong one, and you don't have a domestic market because most of the money is being thrown into the manufacturing and tech sector, then you don't have a market. So the deflation is a sign that there's lack of demand, and that's really bad. That's what Japan went through 20 years ago.
Gordon, we have about a minute for a quick question.
So, Andy, if you look at the Chinese economy in, say, 6 months, where are we?
Unless there's a miracle with some EV company or artificial intelligence company creating an entirely new market, I think we're going to see a continued spiral downwards. And in fact, I'm expecting another 5 years of this. And there's even talk of Xi Jinping gradually shifting aside to make way for new leadership, although there's very little confirmation of that. So I think it's going to be a tough time for probably another 5 years or 5 to 10 years for China.
Andrew Collier, principal at Orient Capital Research, the author of a book I'm looking forward to talking about because technology, as he said, is Xi Jinping's magic carpet and it's not flying. Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.